Welcome to the Lesbian Book Club with Claire Lydon. Please enjoy the podcast from My Lesbian Radio.
So hello, and welcome to the fifth episode of the Lesbian Book Club with me, your host, Claire Lydon. Episode number 5, doesn't time fly? It is Friday, March the 20th, as I record this, and this morning was the great solar eclipse. First one for, you know, yonks and yonks of years. Did you check it out? I live in London, and London was stubbornly full of white cloud, which meant I walked to the top of the hill at Greenwich Royal Observatory, where I live. I don't live in the observatory, I live in Greenwich. That would be a bit weird to live in the observatory. Although I could have probably seen the eclipse with a big telescope. Anyway, I went up to the observatory along with, like, I don't know, lots of other people, maybe a couple of thousand. And we all just stood there and looked at white cloud, which was, you know, terrific. But, you know, I felt like I took part in an event, even though the event was just standing there looking at white cloud. It definitely got slightly darker and colder. So there you go, we just stood around being cold, looking at white cloud. It wasn't exactly the solar eclipse we'd all been promised, but apparently people around the UK did get to see it, including my mate Charlie, and why would she lie, and also lesbian fiction author Kiki Archer. So that's at least two people I know who saw it, which means it did happen, even though we didn't see it in London. Hooray. Well, joining me today on this episode of the Lesbian Book Club is author Karen Campbell. But before we get to chat with Karen, I'm going to give you a quick look at what's hot in the Amazon lesbian charts in the UK and the US. Whose books are sizzling on top of the metaphorical book frying pan? Yes, that's what you've been asking this week, isn't it? I know. So flying high right now in London and the US, London, UK and US, is Londoner Alexandra Delancey, whose novella Always Her is nestled at number one on both sides of the pond. And I for one say a big thank goodness for that, because at numbers 2, 3 and 4 in the UK charts, there's all manner of books about women in scanty pants, horny MILFs and busty mothers. Ye gads. So well done, Alexandra Delancey. Also scoring big in the US and the UK is Heather McVeigh's Fallen Elements, which is the story of Ryan Myers, who meets the mysterious Leah on a train and her life turns upside down. Apparently there's a paranormal fantasy twist at the end, so we can only hope for a lesbian vampire. If there is a lesbian vampire, sorry, I've just ruined it. I don't know, I haven't read it. Finally, Ravensfair's Rest and Relaxation, a lesbian romance, is also scoring big, top 5 in both US and UK. And I'm reliably informed that Ravensfair is in fact the wife and wife team of KL and Roxanne, and they run a farm in Pennsylvania while penning lesfic novels together. That is a beautiful image, I'm sure we'll all agree. So there you go, that's what's shaking in the lesfic world. On a personal note, I've just sent the second edit of book 3 off to be read by a first reader, and then it will go on to other readers and then my editor. So this is the follow-on from London Calling, and it's Kate's story, Jess's flatmate and sister-in-law from London Calling. So my cover designer's on the case with a cover. So with luck, I should have book 3 finished before the summer starts in earnest, so it'll be a great summer read. It's very happy and upbeat, unless I change something in it. I'll keep everything crossed for that. I'm still tossing up, though, 3 or 4 different titles, so I can't tell you the title. I really need to get a bit more decisive on that, don't I? I really do.
Now it's time to say hello and welcome to this week's featured author, Karen Campbell.
Hello.
Who has so far fired off 2 novels, Violet's Story and The Knowing, as well as a book of short stories, Little Whispers. Karen won the Ultimate Planet Best New Author Award in 2014, and she's got a very busy year ahead of her with a new novel imminent. So welcome again, Karen.
Thank you. Thanks for asking me along, Claire.
You're very welcome. It's lovely to have you. Lovely to have you. So what have you been up to today? Anything exciting? Did you see the solar eclipse?
I didn't see the solar eclipse. I had to go to Birmingham Airport to pick up my girlfriend who was coming back from a week's work in Ireland. So
we've
kind of had a lazy day, although I made her clean the bathroom. I shouldn't say that on air, right?
You old charmer. You know the way to a woman's heart. Here you go, love. Here's some Jif. Yeah. Or Sif, as it is now.
It's Sif, actually.
Yeah.
It's strange. I don't know why they changed the name.
I know. Showing my age now, and I was saying Jif. So she's leading a bit of a jet set lifestyle at the moment, is she?
Yeah, she's been working away for a couple of weeks in Belfast, so she's just glad to get back today. So I had a day off today.
Okay.
Ease her back in and do her washing for her, wifely thing. Although I'm not a wifely thing.
While she cleaned the bathroom, are you having a nice romantic meal tonight?
Pass.
Okay, we'll move on. We'll move swiftly on.
Yeah, quickly.
Let's chat about your writing, Karen. So your writing, it's, I would say, sort of quirky and gritty. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, it's quirky. Is that a pleasant way of saying you don't like it, or is it a bit odd?
No. Quirky is...
I don't know whether to be complimentary.
No, that's complimentary. It's complimentary. Yeah. Yeah, it's all groovy.
I do think, I read other books and I don't write. I always think, I don't write like the other books that I read. But then I suppose everybody thinks like that, and if everybody wrote the same, books wouldn't be very interesting.
Yeah. I think you definitely have a very distinctive voice and quite poetic as well. So
thank you.
Yeah. So you published Violet's story first a while ago, which is the first person account of mental illness. Tell me a bit about that, and do you think that's an issue that needs addressing more in fiction?
Well, I was, thinking about that. I could only think of a few books off the top of my head. Prozac Nation,
yeah.
And The Bell Jar. And then One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, which is, the classic. But
yeah.
I was really struggling to find other books that did deal with mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
And it might just be that it's my limited reading. I don't know. That story came to me when I was in my very early 20s. So we're talking... Oh, I'm not going to give dates here. I don't want you to know how old I am. But I was in my early 20s and I had been reading... Oranges Are Not the Only Fruit,
mm-hmm.
The Well of Loneliness, and...
All the rom-coms.
So, yeah. Easy reading.
Yeah.
And A Portrait of a Marriage, which was about Vita Sackville-West,
mm-hmm.
and her marriage to Harold Nicholson. But in the book, she'd had an affair with somebody called Violet,
mm-hmm.
and I liked the name.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sat on a train from Glasgow to Ayr. I'd gone to meet this friend of mine who'd stood me up. And I was on the train and it was pouring with rain and I thought, I'm going to write a book about something called Violet. Because I'd always written little things when I was, when I was growing up. I think I started my first novel when I was 13 and it was horrendous, but I'd always wanted to write.
Mm-hmm.
I'd started another book when I was 16, which was slightly less worse, but appalling nonetheless,
Do you still have that?
I still have them somewhere. I can't throw it away.
Yeah.
And I thought, I want to write about a character who's different.
Mm-hmm.
Who doesn't care what other people think about her, and really that was how Violet came about. But it took me about 8 years to actually finish the book.
Right.
Because I was so. I in between like full time work and things like that, I didn't have a discipline, or any sort of routine.
Yeah.
So it was very much whenever I got drunk, I would sit and write some of it.
Yeah, it's quite common in your 20s, really. That isn't it?
Yeah.
That's what I did a lot of my 20s. Just drank wine and I took up smoking because I thought that's what writers had to do.
Right.
Yeah.
I did smoke as well. I don't know, but I did smoke then. But and as you know, I hardly drink. So
I know, yeah.
That's really true. That's the thing. Nobody believes that. I very rarely drink. So she sort of came about from that, and it took me so long. And it was the same with the knowing. I mean, I know that there's quite a gap.
Yeah.
Between know, Violet Story coming out, and then, you know, the Knowing. But the Knowing was originated as a short story. Mm-hmm. I wrote it probably around 2004 or 2005.
So you brought out Violet Story in 2001, and then
and
you wrote the Knowing in 2014. So
I wrote it around about 2012 was the year I really started to write it. Mm-hmm. I had written one short story, which was the first chapter, and then I wrote a second kind of continuation of that about 4 years later, and then I did a third part about another few years later.
Mm-hmm.
And then I sat down one day to write the fourth part, and I thought, you know, I quite like this character. I could make a book out of this. And my life had changed by then. You know, I'd stopped working full time because of illness, and I had time in my hands, and I thought, I'm going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I did it.
Yeah.
And because, I mean, in 2001, we didn't have Facebook, we didn't have Twitter, we didn't have the social media that we had to publicise and speak to other people, and you know, I think, did we even have a computer? Yeah, I did have a computer then.
Just about, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, because I think I had my own computer in 2001, but had shared ones.
Yeah, so I mean, it was, you know, the internet was just taking off. There wasn't this sort of realm of information we have now. So really, you know, Violet Story didn't bring me fame and riches overnight, which, you know, severely disappointed me. And, yeah, that was a joke.
I was laughing.
So, you know, but between those years, I mean, I really didn't think that, you know, I was good enough to do anything. You know, I thought, you know, growing up, I thought, I always want to write a book. So I had done that. And then, you know, I didn't have the confidence to go on from there. And nobody read my stuff. Nobody gave me feedback, you know. So it just kind of was just my little hobby of writing the odd short story here and there.
Yeah. But then you wrote The Knowing, which has been very well received, and it's a supernatural thriller set in Glasgow.
It is, yes.
Are you from Glasgow?
I'm not actually from Glasgow. I'm from a small seaside town called Ayr, which is about 30 miles away from Glasgow.
Okay, so you're quite familiar with it.
I use English, I'm from Glasgow. I just say yes because it's easier.
Yeah. So was that the first? That's obviously the first book you've set in Glasgow, and you're writing the trilogy of The Knowing, so that's all going to be set there as well.
Yes, it's set because my character lives and works in Glasgow, but there are parts of it I have based in Ayr, which is obviously where I grew up and lived for 30 years, so I know that very well. Like, I was writing a scene in a cemetery, and I know the exact walk from the train station along the river.
Mm-hmm.
When you cross the road, I can see it all in my head, so that made it a lot more easy, because I don't know Glasgow as well as, you know, as well as I know my hometown.
So
I wanted to give my hometown like my little bit of a nod, I think.
Okay. Yeah. And do you name check that as well? I can't remember now. Do you name check Ayr?
I do, in The Knowing, she does go to Ayr for a day out with Kate. Jen goes for a day out with Kate. They go and walk along the beach and things like that. But in the second one, she does go there again. So I do say that she's in Ayr. I make that quite clear.
Okay. So you're quite happy to name places, because some authors are a bit funny about that, aren't they? They don't want to name exactly where they are. They make up names of places.
Yeah. No, I wanted it to be real, so that people that I knew who read it could go, oh yeah, that's such and such, or that's down there, or I've walked there, or I know where she means.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think that's quite nice when you do that. Or like, if I'm ever watching Taggart or something like that, and, you know, something comes on TV, and I can think, oh, I've been there in Glasgow.
I'm the same, because, like, you know, my first novel was set in London, and that was quite important to me to... have it as real life London rather than tourist London as well.
Yeah.
So The Knowing is about a psychic, Jen Keith, who has scary premonitions, and her girlfriend Cop. So do you believe in psychics and the supernatural?
Well, it's funny you should say that, because tomorrow I'm going ghost hunting.
Oh, wow.
I'm going to an abandoned asylum in North Wales.
Okay.
We're just going to go walking. It's supposed to be quite haunted, and I don't know if I believe is the answer. I'm open minded. I've never experienced anything. But growing up, I loved reading horror books. Horror books was my thing.
Right.
But I've never once seen anything or heard anything. So I don't know. I'm open minded. I'm going to go with my camera tomorrow and take some photos and see if anything pops up when I shove them back on the computer.
I hope it's full of, you know, swirling mist and all that sort of shizzle. You know, that'd be a bit freaky.
Orbs and things.
Yeah. So it's in an abandoned asylum.
It's an abandoned asylum where they used to perform lobotomies and various other not very nice experiments on, you know, mental patients. And it's very well known for being haunted. There's been ghost hunters gone there and recorded things and such like. So okay. I don't know why I'm doing it. I'm terrified. I don't know. I say these things and then I end up having to go through with them, and I'm like, why did I say that? Why? So ask me tomorrow night if I'm.
Yeah, okay, I'll call you back tomorrow. I saw on the news actually recently, you know, they're doing a lot of they're putting Crossrail in, which is like the big massive train line right across London, and they've dug up a grave of 3,000 people, and it was around the site of Bedlam, which was the mental asylum, and. Yeah, I think that's a bit freaky because one of the Crossrail stations, I think it's near Liverpool Street, and that's all going to be built on the top. But they had to excavate 3,000 skeletons. So,
what did they do with that? Just rebury them somewhere?
They are going to, yeah. They said they were going to rebury them. I can't remember exactly where, but yeah. So they didn't know. Well, they didn't know it was there, but they said that they thought there was a good chance that they were going to dig things up like that when they were going down so deep. So there you go.
So these are poor people who are unnamed that have died?
Probably, yeah. Although they were going back in dental records, and one of the archaeologists there said that she was, I don't know, about 7 times removed from one of the skeletons. So there you go, she somehow knew that. She could have been lying, she might have just made it up, who knows. I believed her, because she had a badge saying archaeologist. Anyway, and I was listening, go back to your supernatural sort of storylines. I was listening to Joanna Penn's podcast the other day, and she writes supernatural thrillers. And she was saying that every time she releases a book, she's worried that her friends and family will think she's a bit crazy. Do you have that worry too?
I think mine probably already know that I am a bit crazy. You know, I think to write in the first place, you've got to have a bit of a screw loose.
That's
don't
true.
You think?
Yeah, no, I do, yeah, yeah.
I never worry. I never worry whether people think I'm mad or not. I worry whether people think I'm good. That's the thing. And I suppose that's the thing that all writers want. They want somebody to say that was really good. I really enjoyed that.
Right.
You know, because you feel, you know, you're taking a part of yourself and putting it out there for everybody to criticise. Really.
Oh yeah.
Give an opinion on.
Yeah.
And not everybody. Not everybody does that with their work, really. You know, you go to work, you do a job, you get paid, you come home. We sit down and pour our heart and soul into words and then say, read that and tell me what you think. And when people say, yeah, no, I didn't like that.
Yeah, not my kind of thing, really.
Yeah, you go, fuck you then, yeah. Don't read it, see if I care. you put on the big, you know, the act of, oh, I don't care, but I think you do care. Ultimately, you do care, and it's not nice when somebody says, I can cope with people saying it's not my cup of tea, because I don't think everybody likes everything.
No, not everyone will need it.
But I think if somebody said, you know, you have no talent, then that would upset me.
Oh yeah, no.
You know, that would be what upset me. Not, you know, I don't expect everybody to like what I write.
Okay, but you don't mind if they think you've got screw loose. It's all good.
I don't care about that.
No,
yeah,
it's all fine.
Yeah, that's not a problem. I talk to my dogs, and my dogs talk back to me in individual voices, you know. So, yeah, there's probably something missing.
And you say you're already onto the follow-up of The Knowing, which is one of a trilogy. And the next book in the series is A Love Like Ishini. What or who is Ishini?
Well, you find that out in the second part, so I don't know whether to tell you and spoil it.
Oh, right. Will it spoil it?
It It's a person.
Okay.
Aishani is a person.
Aishani. Right.
Who isn't alive. And I'll tell you something. The story of at the very end of the Knowing, I do a sort of prologue? Epilogue? That's terrible. I can't remember.
Epilogue at the end. Yeah.
I do a teaser for the second part where Jen has a dream that two old women are knocking on her bedroom door and one of them is dead, and she gives her a piece of paper and it says, "Keep the name Aishani alive." That actually happened to me when I was a teenager.
Right.
I had that dream.
Right.
And there was two women and one of them was dead, and she gave the other one this note, and she gave it to me and she said, "Keep the name Aishani alive," and I never ever forgot it. And I've always thought, I'm going to use that word or that name in a book, because you know, one of the books I started writing when I was 16, I used that word in the title. So I don't, you know, there's always that, I wonder if it was meant to be something.
Yeah. So you have had supernatural things happen, maybe. Maybe.
It was just a dream. As far as I'm, you know, it was just a dream that I didn't forget, because you know, I remember lots of dreams.
Yeah.
But I've never had a premonition of anything. I must, you know, I can't say that I go, oh, I don't know, Ghost Orchid is going to win the 440.
Now that would be useful, Karen. So yeah. When you get those, let me know, and I'll give you a bell. Yeah. When are you planning to have this next one out?
Well, I've written about 37,000 words of the second part, and I'm hoping to have around 80,000. I'm hoping to have it out this year. I'd probably be now towards the end of the year.
Yeah.
I don't know what happens in the third part, apart from how it ends at the very end. Right. I've got an idea of what's going to happen in the third part. I know what's supposed to happen, and I know how it ends.
Okay.
But beyond that, I haven't really. It's all a bit sketchy in my head, because that's the way I kind of write things.
Yeah.
So I'm working on that. That's my current thing that I'm working on at the moment.
Okay, but on top of that, on top of writing your trilogy, you've also managed to write another book this year, The Diary of a Broken Heart.
Yes.
And that's about an overweight Tesco worker whose life takes a left turn when she's diagnosed with cancer. So yes. Do you want to tell me a bit about that? Is that due out soon?
It is. I'm just waiting on the an illustrator coming back to me with a cover.
Okay.
And then hopefully I can get it out. So basically it's quite, I find bits of it quite funny. It's not meant to be, well, it's sort of a light-hearted book with a dark undertone, because you can't really have a book where somebody gets cancer and it not be a bit dark.
Mm-hmm.
So basically it's this, you know, lesbian lady who trundles her way through life.
A lesbian lady.
Going to her work, eating, and then she, you know, she has an unrequited love for her best friend, which really is getting her nowhere. So she decides she'll go on a date inside, and she meets a nurse, and they start seeing each other. But in the meantime, her best friend from the pen pal from the Shetland Islands has left her husband and moved in with her in Worcester.
Mm-hmm.
And they get up to some, you know, they spend some time together, and there's lots of little kind of side stories, like her postman. She has a sort of running feud going with her postman, because every time she goes for a poo, he knocks the door, and the people at her work are a bit mental, and then obviously she has her cancer diagnosis, and then she starts to, you know, starts to get a bit deeper, and she starts to think back on the girlfriends that she's had in the past, and the mistakes that she's made with them, and you know, how things aren't going as well with her current girlfriend, the nurse, as she would have liked.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of makes her re-examine her life and think, you know, is this the life that I want to lead? You know, I'm just, everybody else has got dreams and I don't.
Right.
And I found it quite sad, actually, because I thought she's this lonely person who's just going to work, coming home, eating her dinner and going to sleep. And I'm not going to spoil it. I won't
Don't spoil it.
Say anything about the end. But I really, the character gives me a lump in my throat. I really liked it. I can see her. She's like this whole person. She's out. She's down there, and she's going to work. You know, tonight she's getting ready for a night shift. And,
yeah.
You know, she's totally real to me. I really loved Viv.
Yeah. I was going to say, what's her name? Viv. Right.
Viv. I really loved writing it as well. It wasn't any hardship at all. The I Love Like I Shinny, the second part of the road. I'm really struggling to write that, but. You know, Viv, I sat down every single day and banged out 2,000 to 3,000 words. I set myself a goal. You will write 2,000 to 3,000 words a day, and I stuck to that, and I did it. You know, and it was, you know, and it wasn't a hardship.
No, I remember meeting you when you were writing it, and you were very enthusiastic about it.
Yeah, I really, really got into it, and I thought, you know, I can do this.
Yeah,
and I think hopefully, you know, when people read it, they'll like it, and it's. Because it's completely different from the known.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing supernatural in it. There's nothing horror. There's no horror in it. It's just the story of an ordinary person.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that's but not boring. I don't think it's boring.
Oh no. I love stories of everyday life, so I'll look forward to it. And you've gone through the experience of being diagnosed with cancer. So did you feel that this was a book you wanted to write?
I always thought at some point I would be able to. I did want to write about it. I keep diaries, and I've kept diaries since I was a teenager, and I've still got a lot of my diaries. And I had the diary that I wrote in the year that I had my treatment.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't write a lot of details, but I didn't need to because it's still all in my head. I don't think it's something that you forget.
No.
And I thought I'll write about that when I can because, you know, it's been a few years now and it just seems like it happened to somebody else now.
So I
was able to write about it with it happening to somebody else, but... You know, I knew the time scale of treatment. I knew which treatment she would get. I knew which drugs she would get. I knew how that would affect her. So I think, you know, the experience that I've had has been able to show in the writing that it is an honest account of how cancer will affect somebody.
Yeah, yeah. And you know exactly how it feels as well.
It is exactly how it happened to me. You know, the time scale. And, you know, you exaggerate some things slightly for... artistic reasons, but
obviously,
the majority of it is as it happened to me.
Okay,
yep.
Yeah.
So,
cool.
Well, I do hope. You know, as I say, the illustrator's getting back to me on Monday, so hopefully it won't be too long after that, and I can get it banged onto Amazon.
Okay, cool.
We'll see.
We'll look forward to that.
Thank you.
And you're self-publishing that one. That's right. Yeah.
I am going to self-publish that one.
So do you... I know you published The Knowing through a publishing house. Are you going self-publishing these days?
I am going to self-publish this one. I don't really... I like the fact that it's... You know, I wrote the book. I finished it in December the 23rd. And, you know, it's only a few months later and I'm being able to publish it with my... the cover that I want, and you know, I've got all the freedom.
Yeah.
I'm not selling millions is never going to happen. You know,
never know.
I'm not in it. I wish. I'm not in it for money. I just want to. I just want to get some stuff out there. And,
yeah.
Give people something to enjoy.
Yeah, no, that's we all just want to get our stories out into the world, and with self-publishing, you know, you can do it at your own pace.
Exactly,
choose your own cover, get it out there, and reap more rewards as well. Actually,
yeah,
so
I do think that. I mean, I'm not very good at self-publicity, you know, because believe it or not, I'm quite shy, and I'm not very good at blowing my own trumpet. So all this self-publicity things where you have to promote yourself, I really have to push myself into doing that, you know, and sort of become a different person, and you know, this, oh, I'm this writer persona, you know, and I'm actually I'm actually quite a shy little thing when I'm away from it. You know? So yeah. I think that side of it quite difficult, you know, having to keep plugging myself on Facebook and Twitter, because I just think, oh, it makes me cringe a bit, you know.
I think that's a natural thing though with most authors, is that they are introverts. I'm an introvert. I can be extrovert when I sometimes, you know, like give me a karaoke mic, I'm an extrovert, but I am an introvert as well. And I think most authors are. There are some exceptions, but most authors are. So I think most of us find that difficult, but it is something that you have to embrace as well. It's all part of the fun.
I know, it's just one of these things that's got to be done. And, you know, you always hope, well, maybe this book will be my big break, and, you know, somebody will take me on and they can do all this work for me.
Oh, yeah, but
the stuff, you know, I don't want to be doing admin and emailing illustrators and things like that. I can't be bothered with all that.
Even when you're taken on by a publishing house, though, you still have to do all your own marketing these days, really. But anyway, and can we expect anything else from you this year? I know that's, you already got two books, so, you know, I'm not expecting too much else. Is there anything else on the horizon?
I'm working on a book with, you know, Angela Peach.
I do know of Angela Peach.
We are collaborating on a story at the moment. It's quite early days, so I don't know what the timescale is going to be with that. And I'm also, I have another book, and I have all the notes for another book, which is about a lesbian angel who gets kicked out of heaven, and she has to perform a good deed every day for 100 days to get back into heaven. But there's a demon, a lesbian demon, sent to stop her trying to do these good deeds, and they fall in love. So it's a bit stupid, but it's just a fun book.
I like it. I like the sound of it. Yeah.
So yeah, I've totally copyrighted it, so you can't steal the idea.
You have to prove it, Karen.
I've got the notes. That's what I'm going to write after that.
Okay.
I love Like I Shinny. I will be writing the sort of the lesbian angel book.
Cool. And do you have a day job, or is writing the day job?
Writing is a day job, yeah.
Right, okay. And so what is your writing process these days? What's your usual writing day?
I'm very much a night owl. And I've had to sort of, I used to write at night, and I would be up to like 3 o'clock in the morning, and that just doesn't suit. So what I have adjusted, and I write in the afternoon now.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that quite difficult in the beginning. But like anything else, you go, well, this is my job, this is what I've got to do.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I might sit here for 3 hours and write one line, but that's one line that I didn't have yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
So I sit at my desk, I put some music on, and I write longhand, and then I type it up at the end of each day. I keep a tally, I've got a whiteboard in my office, and I keep a tally of my number of words per day, so that I can see the word count going up, and I've got it all divided into the chapters and things like that. So it's all planned out what I need to do every day.
Right.
So I've got about 40 days left, if I stick to it. I've got about 40 days left to do the, whatchamacallit, Love Like I Shinny.
Yeah.
But I've got a week's holiday. I'm going to Scotland, and then we're going to Iceland, and so there is going to be some breaks in there, but I'm hoping to have it finished by the end of July at the latest.
Okay. You're allowed a holiday, you're allowed a break. It's all groovy. And I know you're an Arsenal fan, as is my wife. So Wenger to stay or go?
Well, I've always been a big supporter of Arsene Wenger. I've always thought, you know, he came to, you know, Arsenal, what, 16 or 17 years ago?
Long time.
He has given us consistency in the Champions League every year. You know, we're finishing the top four every year. And then, you know, something happens. Like, it seems to be the same excuses every year. We always seem to cock up in one game that's really important, like the one against Monaco at home a couple of weeks ago. We shouldn't be getting beat 3-1 at home by Monaco.
No, you shouldn't. No.
You know.
And what was the last lesbian book you read?
The last, do you know, Claire, I think it was actually yours, The Long Weekend.
Oh, that's a great book, isn't it?
It's a fabulous book. Yeah, it's highly recommended. Yeah. I don't really to be honest. I mean, I read yours. I've read V.G. Lee's.
Mm-hmm.
I've read one of Angela's. Don't tell her that. but beyond that, I don't terrible. You know, it's like girl meets girl, falls in love, you know, they split up and then they get back together at the end and live happily ever after. I don't know if I'm just being cynical. And, you know, but
it does describe a lot, but you know, I'm quite a sucker for that, so you know, depends. Well, just depends what you like, isn't it?
Millions of people out there that want to read that, and that's fine, but I don't. You know?
Yeah, yeah. And what was your most annoying habit, Karen?
Most annoying. I asked Lisa this earlier. I said, "What's my most annoying habit?" She looked at me and she went, "Your OCD." I don't have OCD. She's, I like things in their place, and I like them to be in the order that I like them to be in.
Okay, so, it's sounding a bit OCD, I've got to say.
I'm annoyed. She's like, "Which towel can I use in the toilet?" I'm like, "That one." She says, "Oh no, I've been using the other one." I says, "No, that's the fancy towel. That's the hand use towel."
That's a fascinating window on your domestic life, though. Right there.
Yeah, it's sad, really, isn't it?
And which words or phrases do you most overuse in your writing? Or in your life.
Because I was like, probably the F word, you know, I do swear quite a bit. I don't mean to, but I do. I don't think I overuse a word in speech.
No. Okay, because it's funny. Do you find you use certain phrases or words in certain books? Because you know, I've just finished the manuscript for the first draft of book three, and
right.
I went through it, and you know, I had just so many. Everybody was cocking their heads. So everybody cocking their heads. I'm just like, stop cocking your head. I had to go out and decock the heads. Yeah,
like thesaurus. Cocking.
Yeah.
Other can I find for it?
So you haven't had that experience?
I haven't noticed that. I tend to notice that as I'm going along. If I've used, like, she did something with her hands, it's like, oh, she's done it with her hands again. So I'll change it as I'm kind of going along, so it doesn't seem too repetitive. But
yeah,
there's nothing that springs to mind with that.
Okay. And final question: if you could be the love child of any two writers, live or dead, who would you choose and why?
Well, not for their looks, but it would definitely be Jeanette Winterson and Stephen King.
Ah, good, very good combination there.
Because I love her writing. I love the language that she uses and how she can convey something in a tiny little sentence.
Yeah.
I love her so much. She just fills me with inspiration. But I love Stephen King. His mind is so strange, all these stories that he's come up with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that they're so bizarre, and I think, oh, I like that. I like bizarre stories.
How do you think they'd get on if they were living together in a house?
I think they'd kill him. I think she would kill him. I don't think he would be the problem. I think he's probably quite a laid-back guy, but I can't see her putting up with him.
No.
she strikes me as quite high maintenance, doesn't
yeah,
she?
Yeah, oh, she's super duper. But, you know, I too absolutely love Jeanette. I've got every book she's ever written. But, yeah, I mean, that last one she wrote about her mother was just so gut-wrenchingly emotional and raw, wasn't it?
I got that book. I got my mum to get me that book for Christmas a couple of years ago when it came out. And she was like, "What's the name of it again?" I was like, "Why be happy when you can be normal?" And I got it Christmas Day, and I was in Scotland, and I went to my old bedroom about 8 o'clock and picked the book up, and I think I sat there till about 3 o'clock in the morning until I'd finished it.
Mm.
It was fantastic, and I had my pen and I'm underlining this, that, and the next thing. It was beautiful, and I felt so sorry for it.
Oh, it was awful.
You know?
That, I remember a line in there: I wanted to jump off the roof of my own life. I mean, that's
a lovely
what a
line,
great line.
But horrible sentence.
Yeah, a horrible sentence, but yeah, but a poetic way to describe how she was feeling suicidal. Anyway, one other thing I was going to say, when I was doing research for you yesterday, and I put your name into Google, and it came up with another Scottish author called Karen Campbell. So are you annoyed at Karen Campbell, the other Scottish author, for stealing all the, you know, website names and everything?
Well, I just thought, typical, isn't it? Because, I mean, I could have changed my name. But,
yeah.
Well, it's my name. Why should I change it?
Yeah.
So, you know, what can you do?
What
just
can
well,
you do?
There'll be another Scottish writer called Karen Campbell.
There you go. And where can people find out more about you, Karen? Do you have a website or anything like that?
I don't have a website at the moment. That is something that I am going to be having to look into. but I don't have one at the moment. They can find me on Facebook at Karen Campbell or Twitter, which is Ringe Alba.
Ringe Alba, okay.
Yeah.
And great. Well, brilliant. Thank you so much for coming on. You've been awesome.
Thank you very much for talking to me. It's been lovely. It's been a pleasure.
No, it's been my pleasure. So have a lovely evening and take care.
Thank you.
Bye. So that's the end of this Lesbian Book Club podcast. And this is me, Claire Lydon, signing off. Remember, if you fancy dipping into any of my books, London Calling or The Long Weekend, you can find out more at www.clairelydon.co.uk or just look me up on Amazon. See you next month for more hot book club action.